It's time to get our class started. Good to see everybody here this evening. Okay, we're going to be in John chapter 10, and I'm calling this class the non-parable parable. Okay, now you're going to wonder a little bit about that. So we're going to have time to get into the teaching, into the text. But as I was going through this material, probably a month or so back, I even talked to Rick about it. You know, now I said, now this is not really a parable, is it? And we talked about it, and he said, you know, some people included it in parables, some didn't. So I started kind of doing some digging for myself. And out of five or six different things that I had, resource materials that I had, I found only one, and I had to borrow it, that included this one as a parable. And we'll talk about it in just a minute. But we're going to go ahead, since it's part of the curriculum, we're going to go ahead and cover it. It's good materials, good things to learn from it. But as you go to John chapter 10, verses 1 through 16, is what we'll be getting into here in just a moment. This is what I have always heard of and referred to as an I am statement of Jesus. I am. And technically, if you are to consider this a parable, then in reality, it's almost like two parables in one. So as we look at this, and we'll come to that here in just a moment, let's bear that in mind. It's really kind of two distinct teachings here. Now, the parables of Jesus are found in the Synoptics, the Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Most, if not all, of the people that I've referenced, again, did not put this in there. This is in the book of John. The I ams of Jesus are found only in the book of John, unless I missed one somewhere. But I think they're all here. You have the bread of life, John chapter 6 and verse 35. I am the light, John chapter 8 and verse 12. I am the gate or the door, depending on the translation that you're using, the version you're using, John chapter 10, verses 1 through 10. I am the good shepherd that we'll be talking about, the second half of that one, here in just a moment, John chapter 10, 11 through 16. I am the resurrection and life, John chapter 11, verse 25. And one that we all recognize and probably, hopefully we can all quote just, you know, just at the spur of the moment. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. John chapter 14, verse 6. John chapter 15, verse 1 is I am the true vine. And, of course, this is one of those things that you can use to help people understand that that Jesus is not talking about denominations here. And then what I have always referred to as the ultimate I am statement. That comes to us in John chapter 8, verse 58, where Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am. They had begun to question Jesus, and they're going, now wait a minute, are you trying to tell, I'll paraphrase it here, are you trying to tell us here that you actually saw Abraham, that you're before Abraham? And Jesus made this powerful, powerful statement, before Abraham was, I am. Now, what you can do as a parallel in Old Testament times is go back over to Exodus chapter 3. And you begin to read there the story of Moses, and God had called Moses to bring the people of Israel out, the children of Israel out. And he's making every excuse in the world for not doing it. Oh, I'm slow of speech, and he's got an excuse for everything. God wouldn't accept his excuses. And finally, Moses asked God, well, what am I going to tell the people when they ask me what your name is? And God tells Moses, I am who, or I am that I am. And so when you look at that and you make that connection back up to John chapter 8 and verse 58, we see a real connection there. Jesus' statement, when he says, before Abraham was, I am, that I am statement there is in what is known in the Greek language as the timeless present tense. Now, what that basically means to us, because we don't have it in the English language, we don't have that kind of a tense on a verb. We may have a present tense, future tense, past tense, but we don't have this timeless present tense. It conveyed the idea that Abraham had a beginning point in time, in history, but Jesus existed throughout eternity. There was not a time, if we can use that kind of accommodative language, there was never a point in time in history, I can't even get it out right. Eternity, let's just say it that way. There's no point in eternity that Jesus did not exist. And needless to say, this is one of those times that because of what he had said, the people that he was talking to became incensed about it. Because he was putting himself on a plane of deity. He's saying the same thing as what God said back in Exodus chapter 3 to Moses. I am that I am the reason for myself. I have always existed. I am in eternity. And so when we see John chapter 8 verse 59, what do? They took up stones to cast at him. They were basically saying you're a blasphemous people. I'm going to get somebody to teach this class for me. Get my dentures up there. They were ready to put him to death. So, you know, when you look at this, it really doesn't fit into the parables. Now, we understand, if you're using a King James rendering, that the word parable is used there in verse 6. It says Jesus told this parable, or used this parable, though they did not understand the things which he spake. But the truth of the matter is, most other translations are using something else. Now, ASV uses the word parable, but it footnotes allegory. Not really a parable, but an allegory. The New King James uses the word illustration. Jesus used this illustration, but they did not understand things which he spoke to them. Another source, which is called Barry's Interlinear Greek English New Testament, acknowledges it as an allegory. And it actually comes from a different word than what we get our word parable from. It comes from, and I'm probably going to butcher this, don't mean to. It comes from the Greek word paroimion. And paroimion is acknowledged by almost everybody as something other than a parable. It's a maxim or figure of speech of some sort, an allegory, an illustration, but not a parable. Now, let's look at this, the teachings here, because we have plenty to look at, and it's some great teaching by Jesus because of who he was dealing with. Beginning in chapter 10 and verse 1, Jesus said, "Most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him, the doorkeeper or porter," King James rendering, I believe, "opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." So Jesus starts out by making, if you will, a teaching here, in which basically he is saying there is a way into the sheepfold, a proper way into the sheepfold, and that is via the door. And he says, now notice again, to him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Somebody says, well, who is the doorkeeper, or who is the porter? I don't know if I have a concrete answer on that. I have read a couple of things where people were thinking in terms of, well, this doorkeeper, this porter, is an allusion to John the Baptist. Now, I don't know, Rick or Brian, have y'all seen that?
Yes, I have seen that.
You have?
John the Baptist, some reference it as the father, but yeah, there are many different...
Many different conclusions that people have come to on that. I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't have a concrete answer for you on that. It does seem like it possibly could when you're talking about the porter, the doorkeeper, that he opens the door and the sheep hear his voice. You know, that's at least a possibility. But I think the key that we're looking for here is that Jesus is opening up with a teaching here that is helping them to understand, to grasp the idea that there is one way into the sheepfold. Because he talks about a stranger, he talks about somebody else, he says the sheep don't recognize that voice. They don't follow that voice. They don't hear that voice like they would the shepherd. He talks about when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them. Well, that's another great allusion, if you will, to Jesus being the good shepherd. He goes before. He leads. He doesn't, as something that has been going around here in recent years, he doesn't lead from behind. He leads from the front. He goes to the forefront. He is there to be the leader. How many here have any knowledge of how sheep act? Okay, if you do... First place, they can be some really dumb critters. All right, I'll start out with that. They really can be. But the thing is if they know who to follow, if you have that leader, they all just kind of start following in line. Only once in a while do you have to kind of get behind one and say, hey, you know, kind of go to get moving up, get up, get with the pack. But for the most part, once they follow, in this case, you know, somebody around here would think in terms of a rancher, whenever they see him, they begin to follow him. But he's out front. They if he turns around and goes the other way, they're going to turn around and go the other way. So he's leading them and they know his voice. Folks, when we stop and think about Jesus and we think about the teachings of Christ, isn't it true that we can hear his voice? We can see the teachings of Christ. We can recognize the truth. You know, somebody put a, let's just say if somebody came along and wrote something, and obviously it's not the Bible, it's a counterfeit. If somebody came and put a counterfeit Bible in front of you, it probably wouldn't take you long to figure out, well, there's something wrong here. Why? Because that's not the voice of Jesus. I know we don't hear him audibly. We don't know what he actually sounded like. But through reading this, we can know, just like the sheep do. And he says, and yet they will by no means follow a stranger. They're not going to follow that stranger. They're pretty fickle little critters. Once they get used to that, you know, you can even do the same kind of concept with cattle. If you've ever worked out on a ranch or something, and you're calling them up, sometimes that horn on that pickup, boy, I mean, if you hit that horn, they recognize that horn. That sound they get, and they're going to come to it, because usually that means feed. That usually means something for their bellies. But you go out there in a foreign vehicle to them, and I'm not talking about a Toyota or a Nissan. I'm talking about a pickup that they're not used to the sound of that horn. A lot of times they're not coming because they don't associate that sound. The same thing is true here. When as sheep, as members of the body of Christ, as part of the flock of Christ, folks, we recognize the teachings of Jesus. A counterfeit we ought to recognize in a heartbeat. Shouldn't take us long to realize that. So we see that Jesus then used this illustration, but they did not understand the things which he spoke to them. And this again, you stop and think about who he's dealing with. In so many cases, he's dealing with the Pharisees and the scribes. And sometimes, yes, even his own disciples did not understand. They'd have to come to him sometimes after a parable. And you know, can you explain this to us? We don't understand this. And so they don't understand. Verse 7, then Jesus said to them again, most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. So he's identifying himself. When Jesus, go back to some of the others, like I am the way, the truth, and the life. What is he identifying himself as? One way. One way. There aren't many ways to get into heaven. There aren't many truths. I'm trying to say that in a way that we understand that one person doesn't have his truth, and another person have his truth, another person have their truth, and on down the line there is one truth. And when Jesus said, "I am the way," he is the way. When he said, "I am the truth," there's no other truth out there. Truth is not a subjective thing. Maybe I can put it that way. It's not a subjective thing. There is one body of truth when it comes to our eternal salvation, and that is found in God's eternal word, and it comes to us via Christ and the inspired apostles, the inspired penmen of the Bible. So when he says, "I am the door of the sheep," he's identifying himself as the one way into the fold. There's no other way. In spite of what the world teaches, in spite of how many people say, "Well, you know, you have your truth and I have my truth," or "I'm going to heaven my way and you're going to heaven your way." Well, the problem is that's not what Jesus ever taught. Jesus taught one way, one door. I'm the door of the sheep. Now listen, all whoever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. He says it the second time here. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. In other words, there's where the safety is. There's where salvation is. There's where we can, I like the term pasture, you know, we can pasture there. We have all of our needs met in Christ. That means that door. The thief, he says in verse 10, does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. Now he's already identified who the thief is. The thieves and robbers are those who have professed to be him. Those who have claimed to be him. Those whoever came before me, those whoever came as the Christ, he says they're thieves and the robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. The sheep, the true sheep, are going to follow the one way, and the only one way. Any comments or thoughts? Yes, Rick.
Royce, remember in Acts chapter 5, the advice of Gamaliel concerning the way and concerning those who would follow Jesus. He makes mention of individuals who came before Jesus. And verse number 36, he says, "For before these days arose Thaddeus, boasting himself to be someone, to whom a number of men, about 400, joined themselves, who were slain. And all, and as many as obeyed him, were scattered and brought to naught. After this man arose up Judas of Galilee in the days of the taxing, and drew away much people after him. And he also perished, and all, even as many as obeyed him, were dispersed."
Okay. And what was Gamaliel's ultimate advice there?
His advice was, you better not be focusing against God.
Okay. And so you have a picture here of a time when others came up, and they, I'm supposing they profess themselves to be the coming Christ. I'm the Messiah. But they all came to nothing, didn't they? Well, I want us to stop and think about something. Jesus came over, well, where are we, 2019? We're pushing about, we're getting real hard on 2,000 years when Jesus came into this world. And guess what? He's still being taught. He's still being followed. His word endures forever. It doesn't go by the wayside. These two that Gamaliel was talking about here, they went by their wayside. They didn't last. And basically, doesn't he also say that basically, that if Jesus isn't the true Christ, and I'm trying to remember if I'm in the right place, that'll die too.
It'll come to naught.
So just, don't get all upset about it. If he's not the real one, and I'm sure Gamaliel didn't think he was the true one anyway. But that's a good scripture to bring into this. Verse 10, where he says the thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. He says, I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. Jesus did not come into this world to make some sort of a social statement. He didn't come into the world to make a political statement. Jesus didn't come into the world to receive the accolades of men. You know, to don, if you will, a robe and a crown and you know, have that kind of a position. He says, I came for what purpose? That man might have an abundant life. Folks, there is one and only one place that we can find that abundant life. Oh, everybody's going to go through life. Some are going to have very long lives. Some are going to have relatively short lives. But we're all got a life. But the key is how do we live that life? What's offered to us? If we attach ourselves to things like money, just possessions in general, power, notoriety of men, that's what we're going to get out of it. But if we attach our beliefs, our thinking, our teaching, and our life on Christ, there's where that abundant life is going to be. He says the thief doesn't come for anything but to steal and to kill. That's all their purpose is. Thief has no interest in you. And stop and think about the various types of things for just a moment in this world that can become thieves in our life. And we've already talked about money. You know, look, we all have to have money. Nobody's going to get by without it, right? But it's what it's how we approach that thing, that money, that green stuff. You know, how do we view that stuff? Is it the end all? That power. There are people who will spend their entire life seeking power. They want to have that authority over people, and that will bring you to nothing. I mean, ultimately, that's what will steal you. Will rob Christ from your life. Things like, again, I always think in terms of people who want notoriety. It's like they've got to be in the limelight. That's a thief. That does nothing positive for us. And so we look at this, and he says, I have not come for this purpose. I've come that, and again, he's referencing the sheep. I've come that they might have life and that they may have it more abundantly. And then he says in verse 11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. See, that's just the opposite of the hireling. The hireling doesn't care about the sheep. The hireling's there strictly for the pay. And then whenever the going gets tough, things get rough, the hireling runs. And that's what he talks about in verse 12. Which, by the way, when he says, I'm the good shepherd, that's that I am statement again. Do always at least try to bear in mind, remember 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter talks about Christ being the chief shepherd. He's not just the good shepherd, he's the chief shepherd. And a comment was made to me about this many years ago. It has really stuck with me. When you stop and think about elders, what are elders? They're shepherds, right? That's part of that descriptive title when you look at things like elder, bishop, pastor, these different terminologies that we have that the Bible gives us, we're shepherds. Well, guess what? We are under shepherds. We have a chief shepherd, and that's Christ. If anybody who serves in the eldership, if we keep that in the mind, it keeps you from getting a big head. You know, you're not, for lack of a better way to put it, you're not the Pope. You're not over people in an authoritative type of way that you browbeat people. We have a chief shepherd. We all have to, and I mean all, have to respond to. But then notice verse 12. But a hireling, he who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. So you have the distinct, a sharp contrast here between the hireling, the thief, the robber, and Christ, the chief shepherd, the good shepherd. The good shepherd does what? He gives life. The hireling, the one who is not a true follower, he's there for the money. Folks, when you stop and think, is that not kind of at least a little bit of a parallel to a false teacher today? You have a hireling, somebody who says, you know, I'm going to make my money by this, and if I'm going to make enough money or the kind of money I want to make it preaching, I'm going to have to kind of soften things. I'm going to have to kind of, may I'm just not going to teach on this particular subject. Because, well, you know, I know some people out there. I'm not going to preach on the sin of dancing and all that kind of stuff. Because I know I've got some members out here who love to go do that.
You're the overseer.
Pardon me?
You're the overseer.
Okay. But a false teacher is going to look in as a hireling would, and they're there for the short stay. They're not there for something that's going to truly give life to people. You know, you have a lot of false teachers. You have a lot of people in pulpits today, sadly, that they look out over congregation and say, well, I can't talk about drinking being a sin because old brother and sister and they like to drink quite a bit. They don't have the backbone or the fortitude to do what they're supposed to do. They're like the hireling. Whenever trouble comes, they're gone. The hireling flees because he is a hireling, verse 13, does not care about the sheep. What does he say in verse 14 again? Another, I am the good shepherd. He says, I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and I'm known by my sheep. See, that's as important as the shepherd knowing his sheep. Now, I don't know how they do it. I'm going to be honest with you. Tony's dad was a rancher. And he could go out there in a heartbeat, look around, and he knew one missing. Which one? Well, it's that one like, you know. And you go, man, they all look the same to me. You know, but he knew them. Well, the same thing is true of a good shepherd. He knows his sheep. But just as importantly, his sheep know him. That's why they follow his voice. That's why they fall in line with him. So it's important not only that God knows who we are, but that we know who he is. How are you going to do that? The book, isn't it? About the only way I know to do it. We're not going to lay our head down at one night and just wake up with the full knowledge of God in our head. You can't put the Bible under your pillow and hope that osmosis gets it done for you. It means getting into God's Word. It means learning and growing in God's Word. Any comments or thoughts?
I want to go back to the idea of the word parable or allegory.
Yes.
That word is used, I think, four times in the New Testament, and it is a figure of speech. Unlike a parable, which is almost something different, this actually, these stories all relate to real things, like doors. And I think a clear example, Peter uses this same example in 2 Peter 2:22.
Okay.
About the dog, the word is the same word used here. King James, I think, translates the proverb.
Okay.
But it's a figure of speech, so the dog turns to its vomit as the dog turns, and then as the sow, the pig, falls in its mire, goes back. It's all real life scenarios. So he says here, you know, I speak to them in parables, and they still don't get it. What's interesting to me is in verse 6, that they didn't understand these things.
Right.
Now, this is where I'm going to get in trouble, but I'm going to go ahead and say it.
Go ahead.
Pretty dumb not to get some of this stuff. I mean, everybody goes through the door. You know, I mean, he's using common, but these people, I think it indicates some kind of a higher sense of elitism or something where they just could not get this. And even Jesus in John 16 is using some of the similar languages.
Okay.
He says, using the same word there, I'm going to speak to you plainly. So his own disciples were struggling. So I was thinking about this all day. You better hear them, you know, the shepherd here.
Okay.
My sheep here. I just want to make sure we understand.
I wonder sometimes, Brian, if why they weren't getting these things, if they had preconceived ideas. Jesus never met their preconceived idea of a Messiah. They were always looking for that physical kingdom. They were looking for somebody who would come in, much like what we would think in term of a general, that could amass the people together, put an army together, and run the Roman Empire out of their land. They were looking for the physical. They were never looking for the spiritual. So with that in their mind, they're never going to get it. If I do something like that, if I have a preconceived idea of something, of what something maybe should look like, or how some, you know, or maybe something that you eat, I've got a preconceived idea of what it tastes like, you know, I may never really grasp what that is. If I might see something that is defined properly, but because I have a preconceived idea of what it is, I don't even recognize it.
I've got a son. I won't say his name, but you know him. It's very linear. He thinks in like words, very specific. And sometimes I use these figures of speech, and he'll, "What are you talking about?" But there's an example in Acts 14:27 of another one where it says of the Gentiles, God opened the door of faith.
Okay.
They were rejoicing in the church there in Acts 14 at Antioch. Well, that phrase, the door of faith, like Jesus is the door here, or he's, you know, the way through and in, again, we need to step back and ask ourselves, are we really paying attention to language and the bigger picture?
Yeah, and you know, there's an old expression, words have meaning, words mean things,
right.
You know. And sometimes if we would just stop and think about it, the door of faith, well, faith itself doesn't technically have a door, but there is a way by which we can learn, get in and learn and possess that faith.
So, sorry, Don. But I wonder how many times people might even read that door of faith and take that literal.
Yes, in a literal sense.
It's just like it's obvious.
Yeah.
Like I said, I might have to educate.
Yeah. But Jesus wasn't saying he was a literal door.
Right.
You know, he was saying, I'm the means of entrance into something. Donna. And I'll get Victor. Did you have something? Oh, over. Okay. Anna did.
On the other side of that, the flip side is you also have people who overanalyze.
Okay.
So they expect more out of it and that it couldn't really be that simple.
Okay.
That there's got to be something deeper to it. And we do that a lot of times with Scripture, too.
Yeah, well, you might, but my mind doesn't analyze anything real deeply. I'm pretty simple-minded. I must tell you that right now. But you're right.
Obvious. I mean, it's obvious.
Yes. You're right. Sometimes we tend to make something more difficult than what God ever intended it to be. Anna, did you have something?
Yes, sir. I was thinking in, you know, verse 12, it says, "But a hireling, he does not the shepherd, when he does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming, and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. But the true shepherd, you know, will face the wolf." That, it made me think about the two women who came to Solomon, and one who had a child who was willing to give the child up to the false mother.
Yes.
Just to let the child live, keep the child safe. In other words, she was willing to make a sacrifice to protect her true children. Just like Jesus is willing to face, you know, he gave up his, he was willing to make a sacrifice to protect the life of his children, like the shepherd is willing to face the wolf, to make that sacrifice to face cuts or, you know, battling the wolf off to protect his sheep. Like, it just made me think of that.
Okay. All right. We're about to run out of time here.
Brother Bright.
Yes.
Thinking about that hireling, I was talking to a deacon, I guess it was a deacon, they were looking for a preacher, and they were having a hard time hiring somebody. And I'm just talking in the conversation, he said, "Well, we're having a hard time because everyone who requests to the position, first thing they ask how much we're paying. And I say, those kind of requests turn us down, and we don't take them seriously. We next."
Okay. Yeah, because in all honesty, now we all understand that we have to make a living. You can't just take a job that pays you so far down the scale that you can't live on it. But on the other hand, you do have a problem with the first thing that comes out of somebody's mouth is, well, how much are you going to pay? You know, what is the salary on this? You know, maybe you ought to get some details first. Maybe you ought to get some information. And if it progresses far enough, then you can talk about what kind of compensation do it. You know, can I live off of this? So, that's a good point. Hirelings, typically, that's the first thing that's on their mind. And they're not going to be around for the battle. They're not going to defend the Lord's body. I don't know if I'm going to have time to get to this one here, but I do want to emphasize one thing here. Verse 15 and 16, "As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep." Now listen, "And other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice." Who is he talking about? Gentiles. I heard somebody whisper it. Come on now, speak up. You're right. He's talking about the Gentiles. You can go, and if you want to quickly write down some reference passages on this, Matthew 8, 5 through 12, John 11, 50, somewhere around 51, 52 area, and Ephesians chapter 2, 13 through 15, I believe it is. Or, well, no, it has to go further than that. 13 through something. Read it and you'll find it. Those are good passages that help kind of, if I might use this term, open the door of understanding a little bit. When it says, "Other sheep I have which are not of this fold." Remember who he's talking to. He's talking to Jews. He's talking to the Pharisees. He's talking to his own disciples. And they would have understood this sheepfold would have been them, because they were always the elect of God. They were always God's chosen people. Not that the Gentile world was completely unamenable. They were amenable. They were accountable, but not to the Mosaic law. And so they had a misunderstanding. Notice he says, "And there will be one flock and one shepherd." He's giving them some beautiful information going down the line that was going to help tie the Jews and the Gentiles that had so much enmity between them, that wall of division that was between them.
Royce, will you repeat those?
Yes. Passages? Okay, you had Matthew 8, 5 through 12, John 11, 51 or 52, if I'm remembering correctly, and then Ephesians chapter 2, 13 through, I'm sticking on 15, but I don't think that's right. I think it goes beyond that. Somebody look it up. Well, I tell you what, if you'll read all of Ephesians chapter 2, I bet you can put brackets around those things. You'll find those that fill it in. And it gives us good information about what Jesus was talking about here, it helps us to understand that in God's eternal purpose and God's eternal plan, there was always the idea of bringing the Gentiles in. Any other comments? Has the bell rung? He didn't stick up his red sign, and he's gone.
Second John 9.
Is that another?
Whosoever deviates from and abides not in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. Whoever abides in the doctrine of Christ is both a father and son.
Okay, whoever transgresses. Okay. All right, so if we don't have any other questions, I'll give you about 2 seconds left. It did ring? Okay, you don't have any time left.